broadcast live. Studio A, Global Media News. SUNY Old Westbury College campus in Old Westbury, in Old Westbury, New York.
It's Global Media News time, live from Studio A. This is Global Media News on OWWR, Old Westbury Web Radio. I'm Juan Salazar.
And I'm Amanda Saguna. You're listening to Global Media News from the New Media Newsroom on OWWR, Old Westbury Web Radio.
This week in New Media News,
we have news about Facebook.
Is Facebook for news?
Or is Facebook for friends?
Should your friends decide what's news?
Your pal Zuck says yes.
Where should you gather the news?
Why are some journalists using Slack channels to find sources?
Just ask Muckrake.
Are citizen journalists going mojo?
Check your mobile phone for the answer.
How do you give your news that millennial twist?
Is Snapchat discover where millennials graze for news?
Did social media ride to the rescue after Hurricane Maria hit Puerto Rico?
What happens to social media when the power goes out?
Gamers love Reddit.
What are fans saying on Reddit that gaming publishers need to know?
And from the Instagram desk,
how is Instagram putting artificial intelligence to work? If AI is Instagram's solution, what are Instagram's problems?
All this and more coming up on OWWR, Old Westbury Web Radio, streaming live from State University of New York College at Old Westbury.
Christine Simon is here to ask the question, is Facebook for friends or is Facebook for news? Or could it be for both? Christine, what attracted you to the story about Facebook putting friends first?
As a person who uses Facebook quite frequently, I guess, thought it was interesting. They just recently added news on Facebook. Mark Zuckerberg, CEO of Facebook, told the New York Times that he wanted the social network to focus on meaningful interaction. So Facebook is usually just for, like, all of us to stay in touch with each other. We use other social media websites, Twitter, Snapchat, Instagram.
Thanks, Kristen. Let's keep talking Facebook with Elijah Petaway's report on how Mark Zuckerberg is planning to change our Facebook new feeds. Elijah, what is the problem with the way Facebook's old feed delivered us the news?
Well, Mark released a statement on his Facebook, and to summarize it, he basically said that he believes that there is too much misinformation and sensationalism in the world today. He also proceeded to tell Facebook, and I'm quoting this word for word, "We decided that having the community determine which sources are broadly trusted would be most objective. The two questions that Facebook users will see eventually will ask them whether they are familiar with a source, and if so, whether they trust that source."
Your headline, Facebook is for friends, not news. What do you think Facebook...
I guess just, like, interaction between people. I don't really think it's for news. Like, I feel like we should go to, like, websites like Google, and, I mean, Twitter always has, like, instantaneous news.
Kristen, what does meaningful interaction mean to you?
Just, like, a way for, like, all of us to, like, be more focused on, like, our friends on Facebook, seeing what they post and, like, their pictures and stuff like that, and just seeing, like, their stories.
And how do you think these changes will affect Facebook?
I can't really say yet because it hasn't really happened yet. It all really depends on how it goes. Maybe people will, like, use Twitter and Snapchat and all the other social media sites more.
All right. Thank you, Christian. Now back to Elijah. What did Mark exactly say?
Mark released a statement that said that he wanted to decide that the community was determining which sources were broadly trusted and which would be objective. What this basically means is that the Facebook algorithm now will be given the authority or the duty to determine if what news sites do the billions of people deem to be trustworthy or reliable for the news feed. Right?
One more question. What's the general reception of the news?
Well, with major changes like this involving a huge social media platform like Facebook, there are always a lot of opinions and some backlash as well. For example, David Kaya, who is the United Nations Special Reporter on Freedom of Expression, he asked a very good question that raised some eyebrows, and that was, what will happen in situations where a community determines that a news source is trustworthy, but that news source is censored or illegal in that country?
Thanks, Elijah. Up next, we have a report on a new way journalists are using Slack channels at MuckRock. And then let's talk about how citizen journalists is going mobile. Stay with us.
Welcome back to Global Media News. I'm Amanda Saguna. Slack is a very popular team collaboration platform that is used by many news publishers to help journalists to collaborate in the office or wherever you may be working today. Slack was used to plan this webcast today. Lou Quintanieres has an interesting story about the new way that journalists are using Slack channels to muckrock to find information about Donald Trump. Lou, start us off with an introduction to Slack and muckrock. What is a Slack channel, and how is muckrock using a Slack channel to help journalists find documents?
Well, Slack is using a type of collaboration between journalists to find a way to undisclose documents that are in the Trump administration that they do not want to disclose. So what's happening is muckrock has created a Slack channel so that journalists can use muckrock, which is a nonprofit organization, to help publicize different documents that people need as a journalist to find, you know, through court papers. They're trying to find different types of documents on Donald Trump. And so what muckrock has done was created a database, and you can use that database to research on different Trump documents that are unsealed.
Now, do you think by using Slack, it's easier for the journalists to get this information to them?
Yes, I do think that it's easier for them to get information regarding about the Trump administration and these undisclosed documents.
Why do you feel that this is some information that most journalists, especially ones that are learning to become in the field, feel like they need to know this information?
Because what Slack is doing is creating a kind of segment between muckrock so that people who are interested in the Trump administration and these documents can go to Slack and muckrock and discover these documents and without any type of conflict.
Now, why do you think this is such an interesting topic?
Because the Trump administration has been holding off on these documents for a long time and have been trying to steal these documents from the public and want to basically undisclose these documents now.
Thanks, Lou. My co-host, Juan Salazar, is on the Citizen Journalism Beat today with a look at how citizen journalists are going mobile. Juan, can you define citizen journalism for us before you get your mojo on?
Well, citizen journalism can be anyone. It can be just a regular average Joe on the street with a cell phone reporting on news. But what they do with the news, more importantly, if they post it on social media or they post it on different outlet groups like Reddit or to share with other people so that they could from their news.
Has there been a lot of people that are using this way to get information out there?
Well, we can say in the last past 10 years, with the boom of the cell phone and the boom of social media, a lot of people are thinking they're citizen journalists now because the way that they feel like they could report on anything and share it to tons of millions of people in the world that they don't even know, and they feel like people receive back to them and want to listen to their news.
Don't you think there could be some controversy and problems as to what's real and what's not? Could it get mixed up?
Well, of course. People always want to be on top of everything and always want to be like they have the best story. And that makes people put out fake stories out there because they're not backed by any credited news source. They just have themselves and they feel like they're allowed to do that because they feel like their news is their opinion and they want to share it with the world. So a lot of fake stories come out of this, but it's up to the viewers to decide what's fake and what's real.
Do you have any tips as to help viewers and everyone that's getting their information this way to decipher which is real and which is fake news?
Well, definitely look at credited sources and also do information on anything you hear. It's always good to research and find on your own if the news is real.
Now, what do you think would play a huge role in citizen journalism?
Well, a huge role already is the cell phone. With the boom of the cell phone, citizen journalism is at its all-time high because everyone reports from their cell phone. Their cell phone is a little device they carry, and they go everywhere with it. And it's just so easy to use different apps on your phone to share, tweet, post, news, just so easy.
Okay. Do you yourself actually do you define yourself as a citizen journalist?
Well, yes, at times I like to blog and stuff, and I write on stuff. So, yeah, I can call my, I'll determine myself as a citizen journalist.
Do you have any tips for anyone that would like to become a citizen journalist?
Well, a tip I can give you is to definitely use your phone. When you use your phone, you gotta, it's how you go about it. It's either you want to be about the news or you want to make something up. For Global Media News, I'm Juan Salazar. Back to you, Amanda.
Thanks, Juan. What is news with a millennial twist? Can you find it on Snapchat Discover? And then let's go to Puerto Rico in the aftermath of Hurricane Maria. Did social media come to the rescue in the wake of the storm?
Welcome back to Global Media News on OWWR, Old Westbury Web Radio. I'm Juan Salazar. My co-host Amanda Saguna has been following the millennials. How do millennials consume news? They may not read newspapers, but they definitely like Snapchat. Amanda, just how popular is Snapchat with millennials?
For Global Media News, I am Amanda. And I would like to say that Snapchat is actually really using their Discover app to get their information and allow their publishers to publish their news articles on Snapchat, which is attracting more of their viewers from the app to their actual website.
If you don't mind, I'm asking a couple of questions. What do you mean by news with a millennial twist?
It's just basically that the millennials that are in the generation growing up, instead of being like typical people, they are getting their Snapchat from social media, Snapchat in particular. And what Snapchat has done is they've created their Discover page, which allows a lot of publishers that are very well known, like the Washington Post, the New York Times, Mashable, they allow them to take their content and they're putting it on Snapchat. So they're subscribing, they're having their users subscribe to their news content, and then they're able to read it through the app.
Do you think this really helps publishers that use Snapchat?
I definitely do think that it's creating more traffic to their websites, because not a lot of people have time to go to newsstands and pick up news copies or have time to go on the internet and then search through everything to find the articles. Snapchat is kind of just easy and it's already on your phone, and all you have to do is swipe and all your information and articles are right there in front of you.
Do you think you can trust all the news that comes from Snapchat?
I definitely think you can trust the news that's coming from Snapchat, because it's from well-known publishers that have been around for a long time. So you know that whatever news they're putting out through Snapchat is reliable.
And last question, do you think we'll be experiencing more publishers using Snapchat as one of their media platforms?
I definitely do think that Snapchat is going to be attracting more publishers, because you want your viewers to keep coming to your articles and you want them to be able to read and get all your information. And with the increase in social media and the demand for the social media, a lot more people are relying on Snapchat to get their information going.
Well, okay. Thanks, Amanda. Puerto Rico experienced a devastating hurricane in September, and the island is still recovering from the damage. Many people are still without power and clean water. Scarlett Viscana Perez is with us to discuss the role of social media during and after the hurricane. Scarlett, what are some of the ways that social media are being used after a natural disaster like Hurricane Maria?
Social media came to the rescue after the hurricane. Many people use Twitter, Facebook, Snapchat to communicate with family members that are in the States. So, yeah.
What category was the hurricane?
It was a Category 4 hurricane. There was very strong winds, so that, like, it left people without their homes. They lost water, power, and yeah.
And I know this is, a troubling time, but how did you think, Puerto Rican people last without the power? Like, how did they survive out there?
After the hurricane, they had no electricity for, a month. Some had no electricity for 2 months, 3 months, even 4. It's a bad time. It was like the world ended for them.
And you think anything could be done to help them? Like, you think anything in the United States, should do something to help them? Or, the president?
Yeah, many people helped, except the president. celebrities helped. Celebrities like J-Lo, Daddy Yankee, the Puerto Rican celebrities. Yeah.
Do you think that the use of social media really helped get the like awareness that the hurricane hit Puerto Rico really hard?
Yeah.
How do you think it helped that way?
Through social media, people can see like how bad it was, and they kind of contributed, you know, by donating anything that they can, donating food, water, and all the supplies that they need to get the island back to regular, to how it was before the hurricane.
Now, assuming that you're a social media user, did you see anything personally about the hurricanes in Puerto Rico that made you think, like, oh my goodness, how is this happening, and what are we going to do about it?
Yeah, there was many pictures. You see, like, the trees, like, falling on top of the cars. It was just horrible.
Do you know how it's doing today? Have they been changing? Are they still devastated with everything that was going on?
Well, today, things are getting way better, you know. Electricity is back, and they're working on getting things how it used to be before.
Do you feel that if social media wasn't around, there wouldn't have been a lot of awareness towards what happened to Puerto Rico?
Definitely, there wouldn't be no awareness, because without social media, you know, you can't see things that are going in the world.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you on that. Social media does help everyone get around and information get back. And what do you think about the celebrities coming forward and helping? Do you think that they were just doing it to make up a good appearance for themselves, or do you think that they actually really cared about what was going on?
I think they were actually being genuine. They really cared for what was going on. You know, nobody would wish that on a person, to lose their homes and their belongings. Yeah.
I think we can both mutually agree that with social media, the awareness towards Puerto Rico has been brought to them, and hopefully still today they are getting all the help that they need.
For Global Media News, I'm Scarlett Vizcaino-Perez. Back to you, Juan.
Thanks, Scarlett. We will be right back with a look at gaming fans on Reddit and a report on how Instagram is using artificial intelligence.
Reddit is a very popular platform with fans of gaming. If you want to understand the world of gaming fandom, then you need to dive into gaming subreddits that are full chatter that only gamers can truly understand. Noah Miranda is here to guide us and translate us so that we can understand just a little bit of this vast world of gaming that runs deep on Reddit. Noah, which particular topic on Reddit inspired you this week?
If you've ever been on Reddit, there's a lot of subreddits dedicated to just games alone and chatter about those games. And one of those games that's really popular, published by one of the biggest companies in the world, EA, is Star Wars Battlefront 2. And this game received a lot of negative controversy concerning microtransactions. And if you've ever played a game since like 2014, you've seen a little tab on the start menu that says Store. And under the store, it can have a lot of things. There could be extensions to the actual game itself, but a lot recently has been microtransactions, like loot boxes. Pretty much that you pay for and you gamble away your money to get 3 random items that can help you in the game or just cosmetically. And people end up sinking a lot of money into these. And I think a lot of publishers know the target audience for these games. Like Star Wars, you're going to get a lot of 11 to 13-year-old kids who could take their mom's credit card and easily sink like $40 or $50 just buying these loot boxes. And that's what's dangerous. And EA recently published a comment that received over 600,000 negative comment karma, which is basically dislikes. Each one is a person. And this forced them, actually, to go back on one of their policies in the game after Disney spoke with them and considered retracting their offer on the license. And now they're only recently being added back, but it showed that if a bunch of people get angry on the internet, it could actually do something, which is something the Boach was unheard of before now. Everyone felt like they were just screaming at brick walls talking about this kind of stuff. They thought it would never go away, but the combined effort of all these people managed to get something pulled back.
Do you think a platform like Reddit allows for companies like this to listen to the gaming community and allow for like companies to like listen on feedback and change certain things in the game?
Absolutely. There's a lot of AMAs, Ask Me Anythings, that are done by companies just for this purpose, because a lot of updates don't go over well with certain gamers, and a lot of people, a lot of these companies owe Reddit to making their games popular. Something like Rainbow Six Siege, which was a flop at launch, became more popular over the dedication of a bunch of people pretty much talking about the game, making jokes about the game, making YouTube videos about the game that got more people interested in buying the game and playing it.
Do you think they only focus on microtransactions? Because I'm a gamer myself, and microtransactions, I think, have changed the world of gaming, because loot boxes or loot crates or even supply drops have made the gaming community going crazy, because it's something that they don't know what to expect from it, and they just spend their money on it continuously to get that prize selection if they want, that prize item that they may want. So do you think that the companies like this only focus on the microtransaction or making the items available easier or faster? What do you think?
They're focused on the money, not to pull any punches. A lot of them, like with Call of Duty, just for example, you could spend $50 on that game, and if you've already bought loot boxes in the past, you can get a whole bunch of duplicates. You're basically throwing your money into the wind.
Do you think Reddit is something that's easy to access for those that aren't gamers? Like, I'm not a gamer myself, so I don't really know would I be able to get it? I don't understand how the website really works.
Yes, it's pretty simple. There's a homepage and a search bar, and anything that you're interested in, you can just type it up in the search bar and you'll find it fairly easily. You'll find topics, the most popular posts, what's hot, what's trending, and what's like more positively received by other people on Reddit. It's a fairly simple and easy to navigate place, and you can subscribe to certain boards so you can get updates through email and on your phone, like what people are posting, and I'm sure there's an app for it too.
So would you say that this is kind of like a social media app for gamers, that it's not necessarily a place where you post things like how to play the game, but you more of a conversation about what to do with it?
It's not even necessarily just for gamers. It's there's a lot of comedy. Like, just for recently, the Super Bowl happened, and there's a poll Reddit dedicated to the Superb Owl, you know. But for gamers, it's fairly easy to navigate. It's kind of like a forum page. You ask each other questions, you get feedback from a whole bunch of people. Like, there's over 200,000 people subscribed to certain boards, so you're going to get answers, and it's fairly quick, easy, and it's easy to understand as well.
Do any of those answers you ever get, like, can you trust them, or are people just joking around, or do you think they actually really do give genuine answers to people that have questions?
I mean, yes and no. There's a lot of people who will be genuine and they will help you. They'll give you the answer that you're looking for. But there's also a lot of people who are just antagonistic on the internet. That's just how things are. They'll give you a shitty, a bad answer. And or they won't give you an honest answer.
Do you think like Reddit is like a open, like a Pandora box for like gamers just to go wild out and just express themselves, something that hasn't been able to done before, like games with like systems with like PS2, Dreamcast, like all them old games? You think it's different now?
Yes, actually. Reddit and the internet in general have kind of opened up a door for those games to have renewed popularity. Like, just for an example, there's a game called Shenmue, which was popular on the Dreamcast, that's recently getting a sequel only because fans demanded it so much after the popularity of YouTube videos and comedy that was within the game. It created a demand for the game, so the publishers and developers answered. For Global Media News, I'm Noah Miranda. Back to you, Amanda.
And we'll be right back with a story about Instagram. Stay tuned, everyone. All right, everyone, let's move away from gaming and Reddit and back to the world of social media with a report from Jay Shah, who has been researching how Instagram is using artificial intelligence. Jay, if AI is the solution, what are the problems that Instagram is trying to solve with this artificial intelligence?
First of all, no, AI is not the solution to anything in general. I'm a strong contender of not using AI in real life because it is so easily manipulated by us as human beings, but in the end, it can manipulate us as well. So before I begin, how many of you here use Instagram on the daily?
I do.
Yeah. There's people out there that can't subsist without, you know, looking at their phone at Instagram or, like, posting every second. And that has led to a community where, obviously, cyberbullying has been, you know, generated. So this is, you know, my bit about Instagram, because I myself am... I hate social media, but Instagram is the only platform that I use and prefer because of the whole, you know, photo sharing, and you comment on it, and, like, it's a better way of expressing yourself. So, yeah, gone are the days of censorship, and no, this does not imply that censorship is no longer in place. However, the rules for censorship, especially online, have changed. Would you agree with that?
Yes, I definitely do. But for those that don't know exactly what artificial intelligence are, would you mind just explaining it a little bit?
Right. So, obviously, now social media is very much dominated by the millennial generation. We all know that. Now, they've also learned to utilize a ubiquitous loophole termed as free speech. This freedom allows them to post a number of items that were once considered unacceptable, like, you know, the Free the Nipple movement and stuff like that. We've warped the rules on what we can post and what's labeled as art forms. So, obviously, while there's a clear distinction between art, political statements, and just, you know, pure fluff, for lack of a better word, cyberbullying itself has evolved as well as unraveled across multiple platforms. And this increase has, it has become contingent with the increasing number of social media applications in an ever-changing world. So Kevin Systrom, the CEO of Instagram, he went on Wired with the editor-in-chief, Nick Thompson, and he explained how, why, what, everything about AI. So here's a little bit. Hopefully it will open up your eyes a little more.
There's a age-old debate between free speech mm-hmm. and, like, what is the limit of free speech? And is it free speech to just be mean to someone? And I think if you look at the history of the law around free speech, et cetera, you'll find that generally there's a line where, like, you don't want to cross because you're starting to be aggressive or be mean or racist. And you get to a point where you want to make sure that in a closed community that's trying to grow and thrive, you make sure that you actually optimize for overall free speech. So if I don't feel like I can be myself, if I don't feel like I can express myself, because if I do that, I will get attacked. That's not a community we want to create. So we just decided to be on the side of making sure that we optimized for speech that was expressive and felt like you had the freedom to be yourself.
But you are ranking sentences based on this huge corpus of text that Facebook has analyzed as part of Deep Text.
It's a little bit more complicated than that. So all of our training actually comes from Instagram comments. So we have hundreds of raters. And it's actually pretty interesting what we've done with this set of raters. Basically, human beings that sit there. And by the way, human beings are not unbiased. That's not what I'm claiming. Right. But you have human beings. Each of those raters is bilingual. So they speak two languages. They have a diverse perspective. They're from all over the world. And they rank those comments basically thumbs up or thumbs down, basically the Instagram corpus, right? So you feed it the thumbs up, thumbs down based on an individual. And you might say, but wait, isn't a single individual biased in some way? Which is why we make sure every comment is actually seen twice and given a rating twice by at least two people to make sure that there's as minimal amount of bias in the system as possible. And then on top of that, we also gain feedback from not only our team, but also the community, and then we're able to tweak things on the margin to make sure that things like that don't happen. But I'm not claiming that it won't happen. That's, of course, a risk. But the biggest risk of all is doing nothing because we're afraid of these things happening. And I think it's more important that we are, A, aware of them, and B, monitoring them actively, and C, making sure that we have a diverse group of raters that not only speak two languages, but are from all over the world and represent different perspectives to make sure we have an unbiased classifier.
So why is this post from a year ago full of cuck and Meme Lives Matter, and the most recent post is full of how handsome Kevin Systrom's dad is?
Yeah. Well, that's a good question. I would love to be able to explain it. But the first thing I think is back then, there were a bunch of people who were, I think, unhappy about the way Instagram was managing accounts. And there are groups of people that like to get together and band up and bully people. But it's a good example of how someone can get bullied, right? Yeah. The good news is I run the company, I have a thick skin, and I can deal with it. But imagine you're, you know, someone who's trying to express yourself about depression or anxiety or body image issues, and you get that.
Yeah.
Does that make you want to come back and post on the platform?
Certainly
not. And if you're seeing that, does that make you want to be open about those issues as well? No. So a year ago, I think we had much more of a problem. But the focus over that year on both comment filtering, so now you can go in and enter your own words that basically filter out comments that include that word. We have spam filtering that actually works really well. So probably a bunch of those would have been caught up in the spam filter that we have because they were repeated comments. And also just a general awareness of kind comments. We have this awesome campaign that we started called hashtag kind comments.
So there was a survey conducted recently where Instagram was it was labeled as one of the largest platforms for cyberbullying. Not Facebook, not Twitter, nothing. Instagram, because you can put pictures up on there. So people are looking at those pictures. So I've heard constantly that now, like with the digital age, whatever you post online, it's public property. Do you guys believe that?
I definitely do feel that sometimes whatever you post, I'm a hard believer that it never goes away, and that social media and the internet is forever, and everything that you put out there is going to stay forever. So I definitely can see how cyberbullying and like everything that you post on the internet being public property can be such a huge thing. Juan, how do you feel about it?
I agree with Amanda, but my question to you would be like, do you think that Instagram should do something to stop cyberbullying, or you think it's out of their control?
Well, this whole AI system that they have, the whole deep tech technology and all of that, it is, after all, you know, geared towards that, towards spam filtering and mostly spam filtering because that's more prevalent there, but also mostly to remove cyberbullying because initially Kevin and his wife, who are the co-founders of Instagram, they formulated it for, you know, the sense of community and whatever, like, you know, post your pictures and everybody can get to express themselves and be happy and all that crap, but I don't know. I don't think cyberbullying could just be ended just like that because, you know, it's about the mindfulness of the other person as well. That's, you know, thinking about cyberbullying and going, oh, hey, this sounds like a good idea. Let me do it. But not, wait, maybe the other person might, you know, kill themselves or something like that.
I definitely don't think that. Yes, you can monitor your social media websites as much as you want with all new technology, but at the end of the day, if someone's going to bully, that's just who they are. They're not going to stop what they feel, not necessarily what they feel, they're rude, but how they like want to depict someone else by, they're just going to do it. There's nothing you can do to stop them and hold them back.
Yeah, but what about rehabilitation and reform and all of that?
I mean, I guess. I think there is, I mean, I hope there's hope for those that feel bullying is the answer, which it never really is. But if there's ways to help these people realize that what they're doing is wrong, I think everyone should fully exercise them.
So, obviously, despite this feature being prevalent, there's another issue, and that is context, right? Because something that you posted online, it might not necessarily have been geared to be negative or harmful or insulting to the other person. It might have been like a joke or something. And this could easily be misinterpreted, you know. So I was thinking about how, since, you know, AI is trained in a way to learn, you know, what people are posting, what's bad, what's good. So obviously, due to that misinterpretation of the context, It could also learn to constantly filter out that same content containing like similar posts, similar characters, similar words. And that might upset a lot of the community. And, you know, it could decrease the popularity of Instagram. So obviously Systrom also talked about it a little bit in the interview about how, you know, he had all of the spam going on to his own personal account because of a lot of the people being unhappy with the features. And that was a year ago, before all of this was in place. So again, you know, it's all about community and all of that stuff. So what do you guys think about, you know, just the whole context aspect?
I feel like people can, like you said before, they'll put something up and people are very, like, sensitive and they can take it a whole nother way. And that doesn't really take away from what they're trying to post. So I definitely can see how this new technology to filter out everything that's bad can go wrong. I do feel that, yes, it's positive because they're trying to wean out all those bullies and trying to get everything that's bad off of it. But at the same time, for those that have a sense of humor and just try to like be funny and post things that are like don't really mean anything and don't want to offend anyone, that's not fair to them for them to be penalized for it.
I feel like people are going to post what they want on Instagram. There's no reality to that. It's like you can't stop that. But I feel like Instagram needs to like do something. Like you see how they have sponsorship ads every time on their pages, random sponsorship
like
ads.
The targeted.
Yeah, like
ones.
That. I feel like they should like post like a suicide awareness or like a help bullying or something, or even educate people on what are the numbers of suicide bullying or what are the causes.
Yeah, but unfortunately, you know, if you don't like, you know, like similar content or share whatever, then they won't show you because it is targeted, you know. So if you like a certain genre of music, they'll only show you stuff related to that. So, yeah, you're right. They should like bring up like a general market and like, you know, certain things that are important, like you said, the suicide hotline and stuff like that. They should have it like on every single account. What else? What other things do you believe would be a good idea for them to have on everybody's account, like to create awareness?
I feel like they should have at least like a group discussion about it, or they should have an open forum on Instagram like, where people are allowed to share their thoughts or even express how they feel about the matter.
But then don't you think that would be, I guess, not... That would change the purpose of Instagram because it was created just to, you know, share pictures and whatever.
Yeah, I agree with you, but, like, what about if Instagram takes the extra step? Like, go outside the box, out brand themselves.
But you know Reddit's already done that. I'm kidding.
No.
I think that maybe it's just the thought what Instagram could do. Like when you go to create your account, you can put in what you personally would like, how people should monitor your site. Like if you're a funny person that posts things that can be funny and other people can be sensitive about it, then your Instagram will be labeled like, I post things, but don't take it the wrong way. Or if you don't like people saying like, you're fat, you look ugly, then you can mark that off. Like, listen, if this gets posted, it gets automatically deleted. Like you don't want to see it. So a way to personally monitor your Instagram for everyone. So it's adjusted to the way that you want everyone to view you rather than people making assumptions.
Right, so let's hear what Kevin Systrom had to say in the interview. Yet again, it was on Wired with the editor-in-chief, Nick Thompson, and they talked a lot about it. Like, they went into detail about this, so let's hear what he has to say.
Speak two languages, but are from all over the world.
So let's take a sentence like, these hoes ain't loyal, which is a phrase that I believe a previous study on Twitter had a lot of trouble with. Your theory is that some people will say, oh, that's a lyric, therefore it's okay. Some people won't know, it will get through. But enough raters looking at enough comments over time will allow lyrics to get through, and these hoes ain't loyal. I can post that on your Instagram feed if you post a picture which deserves that comment.
Well, I think what I would counter is if you post that sentence to any person watching this, not a single one of them would say that's a mean-spirited comment to any of us, right?
Right.
So I think that's pretty easy to get to. I think if there are more nuanced examples, and I think that's the spirit of your question,
yeah,
which is that there are gray areas. The whole idea of machine learning is that it's far better about understanding those nuances than any algorithm has in the past, or any single human being could. Mm-hmm. And I think what we have to do over time is figure out how to get into that gray area and like judge the performance of this algorithm over time to see if it actually improves things. Because by the way, if it causes trouble and it doesn't work, we'll scrap it and start over with something new. Mm-hmm. But the whole idea here is that we're trying something, and I think a lot of the fears that you're bringing up are warranted, but is exactly why it keeps most companies from even trying in the first place. Right.
And so first you're going to launch this filtering bad comments, and then the second thing you're going to do is the elevation of positive comments. Tell me about how that is going to work and why that's a priority.
The elevation of positive comments is more about modeling in the system. We've seen a bunch of times in the system mm-hmm. where we have this thing called the mimicry effect. Mm-hmm. So if you raise kind comments, you actually see more kind comments, or you see more people giving kind comments. It's not that we ever ran this test, but I'm sure if you raised a bunch of mean comments, you'd see more mean comments. Yeah. Part of this is the piling on effect. And I think what we can do is by modeling what great conversations are, more people will see Instagram as a place for that and less for the bad stuff. And it's got this interesting psychological effect that people want to fit in and people want to do what they're seeing. And that means that people are more positive over time.
All right, Jay. Well, thank you so much for raising awareness for such a sensitive and a very big topic that needs to be talked about more often. And thank you, Juan Salazar, for hosting with me this week. Many thanks to Nikita Hines and Ricardo Morales for producing our show. And thank you to our engineer, Joe Fryman. Today, we heard reports from Noah Miranda, Elijah Pettyway, Lou Quintaneros, Kristen Schmeling, Amanda Saguna, myself, Juan Salazar, Jay Shaw, and Scarlett Viscano-Perez.
Global Media News is brought to you by OWWR, Old Westbury Web Radio, and the Media and Communications Department here at State University of New York, College at Old Westbury.
For more media news and resources, check out our latest posts on the Catalyst at oldwestburycatalyst.org, where you can listen to all of our webcasts and even subscribe to our podcast feed.
Follow us on Twitter at OWWRGMN. Use our Twitter feed to keep up with the latest news for aspiring journalists and media professionals. That's at OWWRGMN.